Bentonville, Arkansas, a bulging hamlet housing Walmart's world headquarters. Walmart, a chain fond of locking its employees inside stores and firing workers for their religious practices. These may be the right circumstances to write a French farce. Maybe we can call this a freedom farce. Do we still replace French with freedom? Do we still replace the word humanist with capitalist?
Okay, so I am here with Marjorie Rosen, who is most recently the author of Boomtown. Marjorie, how are you doing?
I'm great. How are you, Ed?
I'm doing fantastic. I need more coffee, but we'll go ahead and continue as we go. Let's start with a general question about Bentonville, which is, of course, the headquarters of Walmart. The 2006 special census reported that 86.8% of Bentonville's inhabitants were white or non-Hispanic white, and you point out that the Morning News lists no fewer than 494 Christian houses of worship. Now, in a city of 33,000, if we do the math, that's basically one Sunday church per 66 people, so surely these statistics are at odds with the region's multiculturalist possibilities, and I was curious if we could just start as to what you determined stuck out against this clear majority of white Christian residents here in Bentonville.
Okay, all right. First of all, a lot of the residents, you know, those churches also belong to the Hispanic population, who are not white Christian, they're Hispanic Christian. And there's been a huge influx of Hispanics into Northwest Arkansas since 1994. Yeah. And actually, the area is the fastest growing area of Hispanics in America.
Yeah.
So that's part of it. But you bring up a very interesting point. But you have to remember that, you know, 30 years ago or 40 years ago, the area was 100% white, Christian, lily white, Bible belt, Bible thumping. And so they've really had to move aside to accommodate a small but active population of Jews, of Hindus, of Muslims, Marshallese, Marshall Islanders. There are more than 8,000 Marshall Islanders in the area. It's the largest population of Bentonville, Springdale, and Rogers.
Yes, Benton County, yeah.
Right. Benton and Washington counties. The largest populations of Marshall Islanders in the United States. So there is a real multicultural component that's growing. Very much because of Walmart.
Yeah. Well, very much because of Walmart. Maybe we can talk about it in relation to the Marshall Islanders. I mean, why did they come, of all places, to northwestern Arkansas to essentially make their place in America?
They came here because there was a lot of work for uneducated people in the poultry plants. And, you know, for hardworking people who don't have many skills, it's a great place because it's the home not only of Walmart but Tyson Chicken, J.B. Hunt Trucking, and because of the huge boom over the last 15 years, I guess prior to 2008, there's been a huge construction business too, which is also a great source of unskilled labor.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the Marshall Islanders came here because of that, because there was a way for them to make a living here.
But there's also exploitation. You point to the woman who is working this crazy evening shift between 9 p.m. and 7 a.m., and her knee gives out, and she gets let go. So in addition to opportunity, there's also rampant exploitation of unskilled
labor. Absolutely,
yeah.
Absolutely. And her story is heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Her story is heartbreaking.
But to distinguish between Tyson, which was the employer for her, and Walmart, I mean, to what degree do you think each exploits these particular workers or these unskilled workers or these ethnicities who come? And we'll go into other dilemmas too, but I'm curious as to who do you think is the greater evil, or is it just the nature of the capitalist system?
Well, that's a big question.
Yeah.
I think in part it's the nature of the capitalist system. You know, I don't want to actually use the word exploiter, although and certainly I think in the case of this woman, Ide Noriega, I think she was exploited.
Yeah.
And I think her story is very heartrending. Everybody's going to try to get cheap workers, every company. I think Walmart has been sufficiently chastised over the past few years so that they've given these huge $1.2 billion bonuses to their hourly workers, and they're trying to organize some kind of health care for these associates too, but it's hard to do.
Is it really though hard to do? I mean, they make $219 billion a year, so 1.2 is not even 1% of what they profit every year. So that's the question here about
Well, you know, like companies are having problems giving. You know, small companies with with 200 employees are having trouble giving health care to their employees. So imagine a company that has 1.4 million people around the globe. How can they make a, you know, I mean, I'm not, please, I don't want to be the spokesperson Walmart because I'm, you know, I have nothing to do with them. I am not a PR person for Walmart. I think they've, you know, I've been very critical of them in the book for a lot of things. But I think it's very hard to give good health care to 1.2 million people, some of whom are working hourly wagers, you know, $9 an hour, whatever it is.
Would you agree with the sentiment that is expressed by Terry Black Coberly, who was the former mayor of Bentonville, that Walmart is good for Bentonville? She deals with the scenario of how early stocks that were offered didn't quite pay out. There was a lot of money lost initially, and you had to basically ride this wave for a long period of time. But she ultimately concludes that Walmart is good. Whether she's saving political face, I don't know. But what are your thoughts? Is Walmart fundamentally good for Bentonville?
I think Walmart is incredible for Bentonville. When you think that Arkansas is number 49 of, you know, they're ranked 49th in the United States in terms of their educational system. Bentonville has and Northwest Arkansas has an excellent educational system. They're at odds with the rest of the state. Yep. And part of that is because of Walmart. I think Walmart shrewdly understood that they were not going to attract upper echelon or high quality workers if they couldn't offer a school system and a good quality of life for their employees. And I think over the last 10 or 15 years, you've seen the town really improve in that area.
Yeah, but is it good because they are exploiting unskilled workers along these lines, or is it just, if it wasn't Walmart, it would have been somebody else, or it would have been Tyson? And also, I wanted to ask you why you didn't investigate the Whistler Group, which is also a significant employer in Bentonville. They manufacture those radar detectors. I'm curious about this.
How many people do they employ, the Whistler Group?
I don't know. I just know that they are the one of the major radar detector suppliers in Bentonville. So maybe instead of dwelling upon this tripartite, I'm wondering if you can. I mean, is pretty much Walmart is, I would think would be like 90% of the employment force. There are 70 to 90, or a substantial majority of some sort.
I think probably in terms of the Hispanics, Tyson, or the meatpacking plants are the major employees, meatpacking and construction. There are three. Huge. I mean, it's such a strange place because it's in the middle of nowhere. It's in the Ozarks. And yet there are $3 billion corporations at the heart of Northwest Arkansas, and that's Walmart, J.B. Hunt Trucking, and Tyson. And all of them play an important part in the development of the area.
Walmart, as you observe, is quite restrictive in what it will sell. You won't find Maxim or Cosmopolitan or the morning after birth control pills. Walmart sells more than $1 billion a year in Christian-based merchandise or products.
I know, isn't that outrageous?
It's pretty incredible. And yet, many of the Walmart employees you talk to, including former COO Don Soderquist and hardware supplier or hardware purchaser Ed Clifford, insist that Walmart is not a Christian company. So why is Walmart in denial about what seems to me a fairly clear Christian set of values?
I don't know why. I don't, to tell you the truth. I think it makes them uncomfortable because maybe it's not politically correct at this point you know, to, or maybe it is politically correct. The
more it may be in that region, yeah, exactly.
Not just in that region, since the whole country is going more and more evangelical and more, I don't know why they're in denial. I think maybe it doesn't sound so great for their stock worldwide. I don't have a clue.
Yeah, but if the sales figures say, hey, we're selling $1 billion a year in Christian merchandise, and, I mean, they have a clear history of being very moral in that, in this very Christian way, or moral by their own terms, it leads me to wonder why hide it? Why go ahead and not say that they're Christian? I mean, you know, they come very close. Like Soderquist, when you interview him, he says, well, I do follow the scriptures, although I would not say Walmart is.
He's a very religious guy. Now, yeah. Sam Walton himself was not.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Sam Walton was a much more pragmatic guy, even though he attended, I think, the local Presbyterian church in town. I think since his death, or, you know, most of the people in the area, most of the Christians in the area are very Christian.
Yeah.
In fact, one of the things that I found was not just the Christians, but people of every religion were really religious in Northwest Arkansas, be it the Hindus, the Muslims, the Jews, everybody was religious. And that was really the common bond, the common denominator between them, the Marshallese. Everybody was going to church a couple of times a week, you know, not just on Sunday. There were Bible study groups. There's a real religiosity down there that you don't find in big cities like New York.
I'm curious if you were able to talk to any Walmart people off the record and get them to sort of confess, well, yeah, we're really hardcore Christian, but please don't use this in the book or anything along those lines.
I don't think it works that way. You know, first of all, they've worked very hard in the last few years to have these diversity groups. So I've spoken to a lot of Hindus and Muslims there who love it, who came from Bangladesh, who came from Pakistan, who came from Indonesia, or even people who, you know, were born in the United States, you know, engineers, people who are very, very well educated who came to work at Walmart. And even though they spout the party line and some of the things that they say sound suspiciously like some of the things that their neighbors and friends say, they really love it. They have a great quality of life. And one of the things that they seem to love is the fact, well, there were two things. One is that Walmart is really, in the last 5 years, pushed diversity. They have all these diversity groups and diversity clubs and diversity meetings. And the other thing is that they allow people to move, I guess, laterally in the company. If you come in and doing IT, you don't have to stay in technology. If you work really hard, really, really hard, you know, you can move into management, you can go into marketing, you know, and so people feel that there are opportunities there that they might not get in other companies and in other cities that maybe pay bigger salaries.
Yeah. Walmart required employees to attend mandatory Sunday meetings starting at 7 in the morning.
No. Saturday. So, I think they were Saturday.
Saturday, I'm sorry.
Sunday they
were
at church.
My apologies. Saturday is what I meant. And Sam Walton declared in his autobiography, if you don't want to work weekends, you shouldn't be in retail. Now, the meetings recently were changed to once a month in the last couple of years. But even so, you talk about diversity groups that Walmart offers. But the Saturday morning meeting here, I mean, this directly conflicts with Shabbos. If you're Orthodox Jewish, you can't rest pursuant to your faith. So this would seem to me to run counter to embracing diversity. So what of this conundrum?
You're right. I think that the company has had a hard time recognizing that. I mean, the population of Jews is small, yeah, but they've had a hard time understanding the seriousness of Jewish commitment to its own religion. And I didn't speak to any Orthodox Jews who work there, and I don't know whether they got special dispensation to not attend the Saturday meetings or not. But I do know that some of the Jews who were required to work on the High Holy Days, or if they wouldn't work, to send assistants to meetings. And one of the Jews that I spoke to at length in the book, who I talk about quite a bit in the section on the birth of the synagogue there, he says that he has emailed them and a number of times, and that they are becoming more and more respectful, and he's hopeful that they're going to put the High Holy Days on their official calendar in the next year. Whether that happens or not remains to be seen, by the way.
Well, on a similar note, while you point out that Humera Khan was wearing a headscarf while on the clock at Walmart and was allowed to essentially dress how he was. There was a case, actually, there was a case a few months ago in which Ali Abdi was let go from a Twin Cities Walmart because a supervisor had banned public prayer during a work break and was only rehired after there was a public outcry. So this doesn't seem to me to respect a Muslim's right to prayer. So I'm just wondering why they're having difficulty understanding that people have specific timed prayers and days of rest. I mean, did you speak with any specific person in the diversity groups to... why are they having difficulty comprehending this? I mean, from an outsider standpoint, it seems to me like, okay, so you're not available on Saturday. I won't put you on the schedule. You know what I mean?
Right, right. No, these are very good points. I think that the human resources people would say, and maybe this is simply to get themselves off the hook, that sometimes the managers of these stores in various parts of the country don't get it, and they have to be, they need better training, that they can't, that the company itself can't control bad behavior in the stores. I mean, that's basically what the human resources, one of the human resources people said to me when I talked to him about some of the issues in terms of, you know, locking Hispanics in the stores at night, you know, the janitorial staff in the stores at night, that, which I think was a charge against them. Some of the really bad behavior, they will say it was not company policy, it was poor management at the local level by an unsophisticated person.
But I'm still kind of in the dark about the diversity groups and why they're having difficulty comprehending the celebration or the allowance of diversity. I mean,
getting much better in Bentonville. I think I spoke a number of times about the fact that in the town square, not only do Christmas trees go up at holiday time, but they have a menorah, they have a big Star of David, you know, big neon Star of David in the town square, which I think is pretty phenomenal. You know, I mean, it's not maybe sufficient, it's not enough, but it seems to be a really good start in a town where just, 14 years ago, the Ku Klux Klan marched in that very same town square. Yeah.
But if Bentonville sets company policy, then surely one would look to Bentonville first as in terms of like a top-down memo that's issued. Or maybe, is it a situation, do you think, that Walmart itself is incapable of actually enforcing, that we would actually have to have a government enforcement policy of some sort just to ensure that, you know, Muslims and Jews and
I think it was very sloppy of them and very stupid of them.
Yeah.
I do. I am not in touch with the top management. I don't know why they would allow such a thing to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
But I will also say that this is something that's happening in big companies around the country as more and more Muslims come in, you know, to work, especially like in the meat packing plants. I mean, there have been issues at Tyson with a lot of the Somali refugees who've come to America.
Yeah.
And are doing unskilled work, and you know how far the company should go to make things comfortable for those Muslim employees.
Ajaydaf Nalur said to you that the most difficult part of integrating into the larger white community was not being able to socialize with them like we do with the Indian families. The people at work never say, AJ, come to my house for dinner, come to my home. Now, if Nalur has only a professional relationship with the Americans, and he fears bringing Indian food even to the Walmart Food Day potlucks, then surely there's a multiculturalism problem here, and I'm curious about why there's this lack of integration.
No, it's interesting that you choose AJ. I think it was his problem.
Yeah,
because he was so timid about everything, and when I finally, you know, about sharing Indian food, now you know they're all Mexican restaurants, there are Chinese restaurants, there are all sorts of restaurants in the area now. Not an Indian restaurant yet. But he was so timid about it, and yet there were other Indian families, like the Kilkarnis, who were not at all, who said to me, oh, we have many American friends, we invite them for dinner. And I kept wishing they'd invite me for dinner, you know, because I love Indian food.
Yeah, yeah.
But when push came to shove, AJ said that he was hesitant to embrace American values, mostly because of his daughters. He has two teenage daughters, and he was like very, very afraid that they would become too Americanized. And then he would lose control of them in terms of boyfriends and in terms of setting up arranged marriages. And that's definitely in, you know, in the picture for him. And he wants to keep his girls under his wing.
Yeah. But AJ likewise wants to hold on to his job. And maybe the timidity comes from the fact that if he brings in the Indian food, by his standpoint, he could risk raising ire and possibly, you know, having people make fun of him, or I suppose putting a red flag on the sort of cultural divide. And so is it really fair to kind of point to AJ and say, hey, it's your problem? Because he is, in fact, the guy who is bringing sodas and pretzels and potato chips and the like, instead of his, I mean, basically conforming to American society.
He said it was his problem.
He
said it was his problem. When I spoke to him about it, I said, gosh, you know, people love to share other, you know, especially in terms of food, people are very open to that kind of thing. He said it was his problem and his timidity. And it's funny, his wife, who has, it's been harder for her because it's taken her a longer time to learn English. Now that she's learning English, she works at a daycare center. She's having a great time going to weddings of friends without him because she's much more willing to socialize with Americans. Somehow, now that she's learned English, it's easier for her.
Well, if she's the social butterfly, has she brought Americans to her place or
not
like
yet?
That?
Not yet. She's still fairly submissive.
Yeah.
A fairly submissive wife. I mean, for the first on and off during the first 2 years that I met, that I spoke with him. I mean, I would visit them when I'd come into town, and I'd ask what he thought about something, and then I'd ask what she thought, and she'd say, with no irony, I think what he thinks.
Interesting. You tried to
But now that she's learning English, you know, and she's more comfortable in her own community and basically in her own skin, I really have detected a change in her. It's really lovely to see that.
By comfortable in her own skin, do you mean as she has learned English? What do you mean
by that? As she's learned English, she's been able to take a job and hold a job by herself. And I think that's given her a little bit of freedom. Not, I wouldn't say a lot, but a little bit of freedom.
Freedom to further integrate with American culture?
Yes.
Or, I mean, because it seems to me we're getting like a one-way signal here. I mean, shouldn't multiculturalism work where everybody integrates together and everybody goes, hey, Indian food, hey, American food, and that kind of thing?
Well, I think it's nice that she has American friends from the daycare center where she works who invite her to their wedding, which entails a whole day of traveling and celebrating. I mean, to me that's a gesture in a community that maybe 10 years ago would not have made that gesture. And she would have been too timid to actually go without him.
You tried to get Walmart middle managers to disclose their salaries, and you weren't able to get a lot of answers. But a former Walmart attorney told you that he could make 2 to 3 times as much as general counsel for a big city corporation as he did working overtime and 7 days in Bentonville. Would you say that Walmart is paying its Bentonville laborers and managers at a rate that is commensurate to the economic scale of Bentonville? I'm just curious about this. I mean, we were talking about unskilled workers before.
Right.
Now we're talking about skilled workers. And
right.
I'm wondering if we're talking about scale of economy, whether it's truly a fair scenario if this guy is being slave-driven.
Well, you know, I mean, going out to restaurants in town, things are not as expensive as New York, but they're not that cheap. I mean, you can't go and get, like, you know, a dinner for $5.
Yeah.
You know, you have to pay, you know, a reasonable amount for your meals. But I'll tell you what's so inexpensive there, housing. You know, for the price of a studio apartment in New York, you can get a 3,000 square foot home in a beautiful subdivision, you know, with 3 bedrooms and a lot of land in Bentonville, Arkansas. For $600,000 or $700,000, you could get a fancy home in a gated community, you know, with sprawling lawns and a golf club, et cetera, et cetera. So your dollar goes much further there. Now, that's not true, you know, if you go to the big department stores, prices are the same as they are here. You know, if you go to the Pinnacle Mall and you go to the Coach Pocketbooks or Nordstrom's, you know, prices are similar throughout the United States. But in terms of housing, it's a real bargain down there.
But in terms of relativity and compensation, I'm wondering if that's entirely fair. Your dollar may go further, but on the other hand, if it's the same in other scenarios, I mean, you have at the moment where a sandwich shop is like $6 or $7 for a sandwich, yeah. And a lot of people can't afford to actually go out and purchase a sandwich. You have another worker who it's a special treat for him to go to Carl's Jr., which I felt was one of the saddest.
No, that was when he was living in Los Angeles as a young man.
My apologies,
when he first came here from Peru.
Yeah, yeah. But nevertheless, we still have this scenario in which compensation is relative in Bentonville compared to any other city. And so I'm wondering if there is a kind of exploitation even among the top managers or the council or whatnot, possibly. Because as we suggested earlier, as we said earlier, Walmart does make $219 million a year.
Walmart, million.
$200 billion. Yeah, my apologies.
400, I think. It's a huge revenue.
Yeah.
Well, I think there are two sides of the coin here. You know, like I met a lot of women who grew up during the Depression in town and who are living on Social Security and pensions, and they feel angry that the town is so prosperous and that prices have gone up because they can't keep up with them. They're living on fixed incomes.
Yeah.
I have been told by some people, you know, now there are certain kinds of search firms or employment firms because Bentonville has become so suburban and so wealthy in some ways. A lot of people who get hired to come down and work for Walmart, or not even for Walmart, for the vendors like Schlitz or P&G or IBM, they come down and they're on like a two-year stint or a two-year tour or four-year tour with their families. And they come down there thinking, I can't wait till this tour's over. Who wants to live in Arkansas? This is just a career step for me.
Yeah.
Once they get down there, they don't want to leave.
Yeah.
The schools are good. The housing is fine. They don't have to pay a lot of money for it. And what happens is very often they go to these search firms that have popped up, you know, when it's time for them to relocate to another city, and they say, I want you to find me a job with another company here in Bentonville or here in Northwest Arkansas. I like it here. The schools are good. My kids are happy. I don't want to move. So that's something that's a development of the last, I'd say, 5 to 7 years.
Yeah. But there are only a handful of companies in Northwestern Arkansas, Walmart, Tyson, and the truck line, etc.
Well, but now, you know, don't forget all the companies that were the vendors who were asked to come down and make their presence felt in the area, and they've all built office space there, and those are all the big companies, America's biggest companies. Sara Lee has a huge office space, as I said, P&G, Colgate-Palmolive. All the big companies, they were required to come down and have space. So a lot of those vendors, you know, who thought, oh, okay, I'll spend 2 years here and then I'll move on to Dallas or Chicago or whatever, now they say, I want to live here.
Springdale Mayor Doug Sprouse told you that strength and diversity rubbed him the wrong way, and he said, the need for unity transcends whether a community is defined as diverse or not, but if Sprouse's unity involves failing to appreciate diversity, how can this be considered community?
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah.
I agree with you on
yeah.
that. I think that because in Springdale and Rogers, the non-white Christian population, when that's mostly the Hispanic population,
yeah.
has grown so quickly so that now it's a third.
Yeah.
It's 33% of the population of Rogers and Springdale. I think that these towns are overwhelmed by it and by the issues that it brings up, because it does bring up issues like schooling. You know, how do you school children who aren't speaking English? How do you educate their parents about the community rules and regulations? I think there are all sorts of issues that come up that these communities are trying to deal with, and sometimes they deal with them well, and sometimes they deal with them very clumsily and very problematically.
Well, you also chronicle the many abuses of the Bentonville and Rogers Police Department in relation to ICE Section 287G, whereby the police can essentially remand undocumented workers in, for even a littering violation. So this has unleashed a climate of fear within the Hispanic community. So even legally documented workers are terrified of leaving their homes. So this doesn't seem much like integration to me, particularly when you have a rising Hispanic community. So what of this idea, if unity involves towing to the hard white line, then I'm wondering if integration is possible, or is this a situation where you have to basically stay the course for a decade or so until people kind of converge together, or what?
No, I think that, you know, I'm very against 287G. I think it created a terrible climate of fear in the area. That said, I almost wonder if in some ways the community is sorry that it did it, because what happened between 287G and the economic, I wouldn't say bust, it's not an economic bust in Northwest Arkansas, but certainly the recession, what's happened is that a lot of unskilled laborers have fled. Unskilled laborers have fled, the ones, especially the people who are undocumented.
Yeah.
And some of these companies don't have enough laborers to work for them, so it's like a double-edged sword.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they provide a tremendous, huge revenues in the area. So I'm wondering if in some ways there's some, if the powers that be feel maybe sorry that they enacted such such extreme measures, which you know, and of course they trained the police in all three towns to a certain number of police to work for ICE, and they're not really accountable to anybody. It's a very bad situation, but I'm hoping that, you know, it changes soon, that it'll change. There's a wonderful Hispanic population in town. They're working very hard. One of the problems is there are no Hispanics in government.
Yeah. Well, on the other hand, if Walmart's interests are skirting this law or reforming this law so that they can actually hire unskilled Hispanic workers to do jobs and pay them less, I'm not certain if their particular interest in this would be so benevolent. It's interesting that there is this simultaneous twins of forces here. We have the obvious enforcement forces, the police going ahead and remanding various workers, and we have the corporate forces wanting to hire them. So it seems as if you're caught within these two terrible points on the spectrum.
I think the corporate forces are really scared to hire them now. You know, since Postville, Iowa, you know the situation in Postville, Iowa with agriprocessors, which was closed down, and the whole company, the whole town kind of imploded as a result. I think companies are really, really scared to hire undocumented workers now. And I don't think that affects Walmart so much as it does all the poultry producers in the area. You know, Arkansas was the home of broiler chickens. They invented the broiler. So there are many, many poultry companies around. And what I was told was that with not enough undocumented cheap labor, they are now going down to Puerto Rico. And, you know, just the way they're looking for Marshallese who don't have issues with documentation, they're bringing in unskilled laborers from Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
Who will work for that kind of low, you know, that kind of cheap salary.
Yeah, yeah. Well, also, I wanted to just one final question. You talked with Rogers Mayor Steve Womack. He says to you, in our society, while there are exceptions, most people have the number of kids that they can reasonably support. Now, you do call this appalling, but I'm wondering why you also called some of his thoughts along these lines thoughtful and refreshing. I mean, how can multiculturalism possibly thrive when you have a guy like this making incredible racist stereotypes?
Well, at least he doesn't hide it. You know, I mean, it's just refreshing that he stands by his point of view. He doesn't hide it. You know, and he goes to great lengths to he did go to great lengths to show me that he was not a quote-unquote racist by telling me about all these kids he went to school with, you know, all these black kids that were his friends as you know, a student in grade school and high school. Look, I do not condone his point of view at all.
Yeah.
But I'm at least glad that when you talk to him, you know what you're getting.
Yeah.
You don't have somebody who's nodding yes, yes, yes to you and then turns around and, you know, sends a force of policemen to train with ICE.
Well, you can make the same claim about Sheriff Joe, I mean, in Arizona. The problem here is that they may be upfront about their prejudices and where they stand, but on the other hand, they are totally unaware that what they're saying is, in fact, an expression of white privilege, and that actually stands against the obvious cultural developments that are occurring in northwestern Arkansas. So the question is there a way to get through to Womack to say to him, like, look, your policy, your stance on 287G is in fact enforcing white privilege. It's actually causing Hispanic workers to be terrified. It's not a reasonable unification of culture so that everybody can get along. You know what I mean?
He will bring up the law. And he will say, if people are disobeying the law, if they are undocumented, I cannot abide by this. That would be his point of view. I will support people of any ethnic background, any color, as long as they come into this country legally, as long as they abide by the law. That would be his position. It may be a way of wiggling out of a certain bias or bigotry. I think the people in the area are terrified. White people who, you know, not the young people. I think young people are much more flexible, but the older people are terrified.
Yeah.
They're terrified, and you know, like, I had a number of people in Rogers, old timers, say to me, oh, you know, they make a lot, you know, those people make a lot of noise in Walmart. They park all their cars on the lawn. Just the same kind of stuff that Steve Womack says.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a matter of waiting for the bigots to die off? Is that the solution?
Hopefully. No, I mean, it's a matter of educating people. And yet, as some people have said, including the daughter of the former head of human resources, Ronna Peterson, the daughter of Coleman Peterson, who headed human resources at Walmart for so many years, she said she recognized early on that most of the bigotry had economic roots.
Yeah.
That most of the Mexicans in school were were not tolerated because they were poorer. And you see that. You see that throughout. I mean, I have, met in Northwest Arkansas some Hispanics and some Muslims, people who've made lots and lots of money.
Yeah.
And they've become pillars of the community. You know, people can understand them. But it's the working class people that scare the white community.
Well, this has been a very interesting conversation, but Marjorie, thanks so much for taking the time out to talk. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Let's hope for unification.
Thank you. Let's hope for unification. What it is we're leaning on. Who was it that first said it? Could it be he could be wrong? About the pilgrims and the natives having dinner on the lawn. I think if I was ever king, I would buy a censorship. Were the only books upon the shelves were the ones that I had read? Oh, and put them up in order, set my photo down the spine. To tell the story of the living without forgetting those who died. And I would die a happy man, cause I did the best that I could do. To find a better way of leaving, should we leave that up to you? Who was it that first said it? Yeah, the one.